Pitching to Contact is back. As always, new episodes whenever myself and my co-host are all on the same page. We have another dandy for you listeners today. If you haven't heard our last episode with special guest Kyle Bodie of Driveline Baseball, go check it out. A lot of great conversation over there. As well, you can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, even CastBox. I honestly have no idea what that is, but apparently we get a lot of listeners on there as well. But anyways, let's get started. First off, my co-host, Peyton, how's it going today, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. Honestly, yesterday was so rough being from Toronto watching the Maple Leafs lose to the Bruins again. I wanted to like jump out of my building, but then I had like my late fantasy draft and I got in Christian Yelich, so just everything's okay. And I kind of survived the night, Raptors advance.
He went hitless in St. Louis this series, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Sorry, say that again.
Me?
Yeah, I completely missed what you just said, man.
Oh, I said he went hitless while they were in St. Louis this last series, didn't he?
I honestly have no idea.
You might want to check on that.
Sounds like a fantasy, Rich.
I mean, fantasy just started for me last night, so I'm just hoping he gets back on track and hits 13 home runs for me every single month. But anyways, Pete, you're here as well. How's everything going? How was your draft last night?
Oh, it was great, dude. After somebody in this room actually figured out how a snake draft actually works and got it all set up properly, it was actually really good, man. Drafted hard throwers and a bunch of guys who hit a lot of home runs, man.
Oh, man. I feel so horrible. Just all the messages just start coming in going like, hey, man, this is not a snake draft. What's wrong with you? I felt so dirty for the next hour. It felt horrible. But anyways, guys, we have a special guest on this podcast today. She is an incredible journalist for The Athletic Detroit, covering the Tigers on the minor league level. Emily Walden, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome. And this is actually really cool to have you here as a guest because our background is just mainly in scouting and player development, and we haven't really spoken to a lot of people on the journalist side. So it's really cool to just get your opinion on just on baseball and from that lens. So I think we will have a pretty cool conversation today. And something that I just want to get started with right off the bat, I was watching a Saber talk of yours from a couple years ago, and from what I know, just following you on Twitter, it seems like you're a diehard Detroit. You're from Detroit. You follow the Detroit Tigers. But in the Saber talk, you said that you were raised a Cubs fan. How did that all start?
Well, it's actually kind of a multifaceted answer because my mom grew up in Illinois and she was raised a Cubs fan. And so when we would go visit my grandparents, it was always the Cubs were on TV. And so it sort of made a little bit of a soft spot for them growing up. But yeah, I was born and raised in Michigan. So the Tigers were always a part of my life. And I think when I got a little bit older and I was able to appreciate the game a little bit more, they sort of just stuck with me. And as any Tigers fan knows, it's been anything but a smooth ride, at least in our lifetime. And it's, something that we're all kind of hoping that the pieces fall together. But as far as my coverage goes, I'm just trying to work to bring a little bit of education on the future of the organization. So that part's been really fun, especially lately as the Tigers have added some more really valuable pieces to the farm.
Mm-hmm. So just speaking of just providing information on the future of major league clubs on the minor league level, it seems just anywhere you look, everybody loves covering major league baseball. And there's just not enough attention that's placed on minor league baseball. And the way it seems is every team who's just good and competing, all they care about is their major league roster. But for example, I'm a big Jays fan. I don't even care about what's going on in the major league level. I'm just watching Vladdy, it was just announced he's going to be called up on Friday. I'm looking at guys like Bo Bichette, Nate Pearson. So teams that suck, they're paying attention to the minor leagues. So I just wanted to know, how did you really get involved in minor league baseball, something that doesn't get covered a lot? What drew you closer to that?
Yeah, it actually wasn't part of my original plan, to be completely honest. I wanted to start pursuing baseball writing, but like you said, everybody sort of looks to the majors for the platform and everybody wants to write about Miguel Cabrera. And it was an opportunity that sort of just presented itself because the website that I was brought on to write for, they didn't really have any on-location minor league coverage. And where I'm based out of, I'm about 10 minutes from the Tigers Class A affiliate in Grand Rapids. And so it's a very easy jump to the park. I could get over, provide video, do interviews, do things like that. And it was kind of a process of being around the players and seeing, you know, the seasons and how they played out for everyone just sort of sucked me in, I guess. And it was a gradual process of going, this is a really, really cool industry to be a part of, and coming into my fifth year this year. So it's definitely been an interesting ride so far.
Actually, speaking of minor leagues and obviously that, and something that hasn't necessarily been really talked about until recently is like minor league pay and how basically how minor league players are severely underpaid when you look at the workforce. And that was a really well-written article, and it's something that brought a lot of light to the actual issues with minor league pay and all that fun stuff. What encouraged you to kind of talk about that issue? What encouraged you to talk about something that has been kind of kept so quiet for such a long time?
I think it was just hearing the very limited understanding from the fans' perspective of what the player's lifestyle was like. It was never an article written with the intention of giving baseball a black eye. It was more to give the fans a better idea of what goes on every year for the players and for their families. And the scope of it, I think, really brought more of a realistic perspective to the personal experience, which so many of the players who spoke with me eventually shared. And that was extremely difficult for them, because putting out that information and risking exposure is risking their entire career. And so it was a lot of pressure to present their stories and do it in a way that still protected their identity out of respect for their careers. And the way that it all sort of came together, I think, was a very fulfilling thing, just to see that it was so well received and it really opened so many people's eyes, you know, keeping up with all the work that had already been done and trying to bring light to that issue. So I was very pleased with how it came out, and I really enjoyed the feedback that came from it, specifically from the players and the teams who I spoke to.
Emily, prior to you writing the article, and really prior to your position, you know, you taking the job to write for their minor league system. So what was your knowledge of maybe like the pay structure at the minor league level, and kind of like your first impression once you really started digging into the issue? Because, I mean, you know, at some point everybody learns about the issue. So what was the moment when you found out kind of about the pay scale and the stuff they go through, and then kind of what was your first impression, and did your perspective of, you know, the, I'm not going to say the hustle that these guys go through, in terms of, you know, just trying to make it, but, you know, what kind of respect did you gain for some of the players, you know, some of the guys who aren't, you know, your Alex Fiedo, your guys who get, you know, first round draft money, you know, just people that, you know, later round picks, they're trying to make their way through the system. What was the impression you got, and how did it change, you know, your viewpoint on minor league baseball?
Yeah, it was definitely educational for me as much as for everyone else when I first started, because you understand, you know, any baseball fan understands the pay is going to be different in the minors. But knowing how low it was specifically, that was really the sobering aspect of it. And seeing, I think, the lifestyles of the players really helped me grow a lot in respect for them, too. Just seeing how they did have to juggle a lot of things and still try and stay focused on building a career and succeeding in such a competitive industry. And so the way that it sort of came together, I think, helped me appreciate them all the more, as well as helping people appreciate them all the more, too. So it was a really very cool project to be a part of. And I'm hoping the progress that has been made by way of the Blue Jays announcing their pay raise is something that more teams are going to ultimately adapt.
And that was actually a question I wanted to ask you. The Blue Jays have announced a couple months ago that they were going to raise minor league pay by above 50%. So that's something incredibly huge and something incredibly important. I think writers like yourself just really raised the awareness around minor league pay. When you were communicating with these minor leaguers, what were some of the stories that just really stood out to you, and you're just listening to what they have to go through just to continue playing baseball, and you're just thinking, oh God, this is horrible. Like what kind of stories did you hear that just really just made you really pause and think?
Yeah, I think really it just comes down again to the pay scale, just because it limits so much of what they're able to do throughout the year. A lot of the ones who came in later round picks didn't have the big signing bonuses to fall back on. And so the fact that they have to focus on, okay, now I have to make more money when I'm not being paid by baseball, it really adds a lot of pressure on them. And, you know, it takes away from time where they could be training, or they could be, you know, resting, or they could be, you know, doing more to focus on that career. And ultimately, the lack of wages does take away from that. And so I have always viewed it as, from the top of every organization, I've always thought of it as a move that's ultimately investing in the value of your system. You know, you're showing the players, hey, we're behind you, we support you, and this is how we're going to show you that that's the truth. So I think it really is a decision that starts at the top. And having that type of a pay raise, you know, with the Blue Jays specifically, is it the fix? No, it's not. It's a move in the right direction. A lot of people have said, well, it doesn't solve the problem. No, it doesn't solve the problem. But the Blue Jays made a move, and that's more than a lot of other teams can say. And so for me, it's encouraging. I think the players were very encouraged by it too. But there's definitely still a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. And just for the listeners who don't know, according to The Athletic's Levi Weaver, single-A players currently earn about $1,000 to $1,500 a month. Triple-A players, it's a little higher. It's around $2,150 up to $2,400, which is incredibly low. You can't really sustain that sort of living. I mean, I'm guessing a lot of these players have families. A lot of these players have wives, girlfriends, and it must just be so tough for, I can't even imagine just how significant others are able to grind this out, because as much as this is a grind for the players, it's definitely a grind for their significant others just to keep just going through this. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And they were some of the ones who shared some of the coolest stories with me, just about, you know, some of them working two jobs while their boyfriend or husband or whatever is, you know, doing what he's trying to do just to try and support him and help him continue to chase what he wants to chase. So it's definitely a group effort from these families, whether it's the parents helping out or the spouses or, you know, girlfriends. It's a group effort. And so I think that's really what makes the whole thing so special.
You obviously covering the Detroit Tigers on the minor league level, and I know you've done a lot of work for the San Diego Padres on the minor league level and a couple of other teams, but just sticking specifically to the Tigers right now, just over your time covering the team, who are some of the players right now that just really stand out to you? A big one for a lot of people is obviously Casey Mize, an Auburn pitcher who was selected first overall last year. A lot of people may have not known him at first, but then when he threw his no-hitter last year, he just kind of just exploded, and his hype around nearing the draft just completely exploded. Watching these players develop in the minor league system, which guys just really stand out for you this season so far?
Yeah, I think there is definitely a couple who have really, really stood out, and there's absolutely more guys who are coming up. There's still kind of that mix of guys who are close, but then also a number of guys who they're still probably about three or more years away. But at the top of it, I would definitely say Casey Mize came at the right time. The organization needed another solid arm. And obviously, you know, Alex Vaedo struggled last year to translate his stuff over from being with Florida. So having another pitcher in Casey coming through, I think really built a lot of confidence, not only for the organization, but for the fans as well. And then getting to see the pitching performance today for Alex Vaedo, who was just absolutely sensational through a 7-inning no-hitter for the first time in his career, that spoke very highly of him. So him, in addition with Matt Manning, Daz Cameron, who's an up-and-coming outfielder, son of Mike Cameron, There are a few of the many names who are really going to be interesting to watch. I think it's very encouraging for the Tigers system.
Emily, let's kind of step back to the draft last year. So let's just kind of put ourselves in a hypothetical situation here where the Tigers don't have the number one overall pick. We'll say they have we'll just say they have the second pick just to make the conversation easier. So Casey Mize is off the board. Who is the second best prospect in the draft that you think would have done really well in the Tiger system and probably would have thrived as a big leaguer one day, just in your opinion?
Well, I think for that type of a scenario, it may not have been who is necessarily the best, more so that the Tigers do have, they have an affection for pitchers. And so the biggest question when Casey Mize was available is, would they pursue Casey or would they pursue Joey Bart, who was a really, really big name on their board as well? Because the biggest need in the system at that time was getting more bats. And so a lot of conversation was surrounding, would they kind of break the mold and pursue someone other than a pitcher? Because they've taken pitchers. They had Bo Burrows in 2015, Spencer Turnbull in 2014. Went the route of Manning 16, Fajardo 17. And so it's like they're very clear that they like pitchers, but knowing the fact that they were missing bats in the lineup, Joey was definitely very high on their list. I know it came down to the wire with him as far as the decision-making goes. But ultimately, I think they made the right call in selecting Casey. I think that he was the type of player that brings just a very well-balanced resume to the organization. He's just got so much in the way of instinct, in the way of feel for his pitches, and he's extremely mature. So I think in that regard, they did definitely do well. But if he hadn't been there, I wouldn't have been surprised if they went after Bart, because I know he was definitely someone that they really liked.
Mm-hmm. And actually, another player that Peyton and I are just completely obsessed with, who went in the first round last year, Jared Kelenic. I think he was a guy who was linked to the Detroit Tigers as well. And that's a guy that Peyton and I just dream about at night. But in terms of Casey Mize, just watching the guy pitch, I've just watched a ton of video of him in college, and just the delivery looks clean. It's compact. Athletic. He has three pitches that he can get swings and misses on. I'm pretty sure a lot of scouts would go as far as saying that his splitter is one of the best secondary offerings in entire minor leagues. And my question really to you is, do you believe in just a drafting philosophy? Because like you said, the Detroit Tigers are very pitching heavy up top. But do you think that teams just stick to the same philosophy? So while maybe a bat like a Joey Bart or Jared Kelenic would have been a good fit, do you think there's a lot that goes into just sticking to a philosophy year by year?
I don't know if it's so much sticking to the philosophy. Excuse me, getting over a cold. Not so a little bit, a little hoarse today. I don't think it's so much sticking to the philosophy as it is really weighing what options are available when the draft comes around. I think as an organization, if you're going to do yourself justice, you really have to do your homework and you have to really depend on your scouting department and trust that their reports are going to come through and they're going to give you a good idea on who's available and who to pursue. And so I think if you enter it going, okay, guys, same plan as last year, that's a bit of a closed-minded approach. Obviously, if something works for you, you want to have that possibility on the table, but you need to stay open-minded. And I think you need to approach it with the possibility of changing it up a little bit depending on who's available. And obviously, every draft class is a little bit different. Some of them are going to be stronger than others. So really doing your homework ahead of time is very, very important.
So I'm going to kind of take this next statement slash question in two parts. So let's look at the Justin Verlander trade. You receive a guy like Franklin Perez, who's going to be a really good mid-rotation guy. Daz Cameron, who honestly I think will be a really good defender at the next level. I mean, the run tool's there. It could use a little work on the base paths, you know, all that kind of stuff. That stuff you know. And then you get in a good catcher who, you know, may or may not play at the major league level, but could be a really good, you know, backup catcher. Really good defensively with Jake Rogers. Kind of talk about the return of the Verlander trade and, you know, what you thought of it. And then also I noticed, so I follow you on Twitter, and the you know, the development of the Matt Manning changeup this offseason as well. Kind of talk a little bit about those things and kind of what you've seen from those four players. You know, maybe if you want to go one by one or talk about the trade first or however you want to go about that.
Yeah, I think with the return for Justin Verlander, as with a lot of the trades that the Tigers did back in 2017, the guys that they got back are still young. And that's one of the hardest parts about trading for prospects, is that they may be prospects now, but are they going to ultimately pan out? And minor league players overall can be a huge gamble. And so the fact that the guys that they got for Verlander all came so highly recommended, we're starting to kind of see now what they bring to the table. And obviously with Jake Rogers, he's one of the best defensive catchers in the league. I mean, by far. He's extremely impressive behind the plate. And from that regard, there's really no questions. But as a catcher, you have the luxury of not being expected to hit as well. But you really still, you have to hit enough. And I think that's the hardest thing for Rogers right now is, I know what I'm supposed to do, but getting my body to follow what my mind is telling me, that's another challenge. And he's been working with a lot of different hitting coaches, trying to really pinpoint what the issue is that's created the inconsistencies at the plate. And he's an extremely hardworking guy, very hardworking guy. He's got a really good head on his shoulders. And so I think for him, it's just a matter of getting those pieces to click. And with Daz Cameron, comes from great bloodlines, as we all know, for anybody who saw Mike Cameron back when he played. Really, really good instincts in the outfield. He's not as fast as, say, like a Derek Hill. He's probably going to be about a 60 runner from the scouting perspective. And it's enough, though, to where I think he could stick in center field. I think he gets good enough jumps on the ball, good enough reads off the bat. He's got at least an above-average arm, so it's not super flashy, but there's enough there to hold the spot for him. And he's hitting better. The power is coming a little bit earlier. Seeing similarities to his dad, I think he's actually a few steps ahead of his dad, and his dad has agreed with me on that. So that's an encouraging sign again, because we all saw the success that Mike Cameron had when he was a big leaguer. So he's definitely developing at a really good pace. And really the biggest concern for me is Franklin Perez. As a pitcher, he has everything going for him. He's got an extremely advanced pitch mix, works really, really well in sequencing for being so young, worked his way all the way up to Double-A before coming to the Tigers, and he can't stay healthy. And that's really the biggest question is he going to be able to get back to form, or is this going to be a continuing run against, you know, a wall where you just can't get to a place where you're 100%. So for him, it's just a matter of getting that body back on track and showing that he is going to be durable enough to be able to handle a regular season assignment, because he's still waiting to actually pitch. It's been some spring training appearances, some extended spring training, a little bit of instructional league. But other than that, he's been extremely limited. So for him, it's health. That's going to be the biggest thing. And then with Matt Manning, I will be completely honest, Matt has been one of my absolute favorite players to watch develop. I've gotten a chance to watch him pitch at every level since the Gulf Coast League, and he's just gotten consistently better. He's had the velocity working for him early on, and that's actually continued to improve too. And that's a lot of that's come through his off-season training. He works with an organization out in California where he's from, doing different techniques with him, helping him get a little bit more advanced as a pitcher. And it won't surprise me if he throws triple digits, maybe a year or two down the road. I think he could ultimately get there. And his off-speed stuff has really taken a good jump in the right direction. And the biggest question was, will the changeup and the curve sort of pick up? And I believe that they have. They're not quite as dominant as his fastball yet, but they're going to get very, very close with the way that they're developing. So keep an eye on him. He could be moving towards Toledo very quickly if he keeps having the success he's having in Double right now.
Yeah, and Daz Cameron, just kind of touch it back on him real quick. Now I will say one more thing about Matt Manning. Daz Cameron, I think one thing for me in my mind, I mean, he's going to hit. He'll hit, I think a lot of scouts say anywhere from 15 to 20, maybe like a ceiling of 25 home runs a year, just depending on the kind of year he's having. But for me, the run tool in the outfield is really good. And in my opinion, he has the arm that can profile in the corners as well. So I think his versatility in the outfield is going to allow him to be a really good defender. And then with Matt Manning, he's one of my favorite and maybe underrated prospects in baseball. I really like Matt Manning. And I know Pete and I agree. And Pete, I'm sure you want to touch on this. But we've seen the development, especially of his changeup, and I've been super impressed with it so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like looking at him about a year ago, like not to just completely copy what Emily just basically kind of touched on, but like the fastball was there, like velo was there, he could command it really well, but then like his off-speed needed work. Obviously there was questions about the curve and changeup, but I've been just watching. I also follow Emily on Twitter, and I saw that video that was kind of posted. I just kind of saw it, and I was just like, yep, this guy, yep, that's one of the filthiest things I've seen in a while in terms of a transition from where it was before to where it is now. So, yeah, no, absolutely. That changeup and that curve are just getting, like, where they need to be, and I'm just really excited about that. Emily, actually, obviously, if you go to the Detroit Tigers prospect list, you can see the Casey Mizes, Daz Camerons, the Franklin Perez's of the world. But like, what's one prospect to you, other than obviously Matt Manning, that like maybe not necessarily everybody knows about, but like you personally are really excited about?
Yeah, I think somebody who, and actually this year he's starting to gain some momentum. And if people have followed my ramblings and rantings on Twitter for very long, I've been a big supporter of Zach Houston. He's been coming up little by little through the system. I want to say he came into the league in 2016 out of Mississippi State. He's huge. He's 6'5". He's about 250, 260. Has a really, really big fastball. And the thing that really impressed me the most about him when he was still back in Class A, took a little bit off his fastball to work on his secondary. And I think that's really a huge sign of maturity as a pitcher, when you know that when you get up to the higher levels, fastball isn't going to do it all for you. You have to be able to sequence. You have to be able to read your hitters that you're facing, do your homework on these guys. What keeps them off balance? Because as a pitcher, you've got to keep these guys off balance. And so for Zach, watching him mature and watching him get consistently better and learning how to be more deceptive against hitters coming out of the bullpen, he's somebody that I don't think has gotten as much attention as he should. Obviously, I've been preaching about him for a very long time, him and John Schreiber, who was just promoted to Toledo, which another very deceptive reliever, one of really the purest sidearm pitchers that I've seen in the Tigers system. I was trying to think of some earlier, and I couldn't even think of many earlier. So if people have ideas, definitely send me names. But having a sidearm guy in the bullpen is a really valuable asset to have. And so I think having Schreiber along with a big fastball guy like Zach Houston, those are two guys that could really contribute once they've been able to fully develop. And they're still kind of getting their feel. Obviously, the International League is a pretty challenging league to face those types of hitters because they're not that far off from the big league. So getting their feet under them, getting more of a feel for how to stay one step ahead of the guys that they're facing at the plate is really going to be good for them. And I think that they are going to contribute a little bit further down the road.
Mm-hmm. And before we transition over to a couple of other teams and their top prospects, something I've just been noticing with the Tigers is that they're getting really close to just really blowing up on the major league level. Just looking at MLB pipeline, it seems like Matt Manning's about to probably will be promoted to the major league roster by 2020, maybe 2021. Casey Mize might be up really, really quick. So first of all, how long do you think Casey Mize is honestly going to be in high A for? Because he's been absolutely dominant through his first couple of starts. And you can see the stuff is there, the maturity is there, the pitchability is there. And obviously Matt Manning might even be in Toledo very quickly. How quickly do you think these big names just transition over onto the major league level and begin to make an impact?
Yeah, I think Casey is going to be moving soon. I haven't received any confirmation from the team yet, but obviously he's now, I think, 4 starts in, and he's just been absolutely dominant. And for that type of performance that he's put up, he really doesn't have anything left to prove at that level. I think he's gotten a lot of confidence from his success there. And I don't think the Tigers are going to rush him, and I don't think they need to, honestly. I think that he is progressing well enough. You've got to stay healthy, especially with Casey, because he had some health concerns back when he was in college. And so durability is a big thing, and you don't want to force that. You don't want to push that and risk, you know, a certain type of injury. But I think he moves pretty quickly, and I wish I had a better time frame, but unfortunately, it's, my guess is as good as everyone else's right now. So I think it'll be sooner rather than later, and I think the same for Manning. If he's able to have maybe another couple of successful starts with the area, I think he heads to Toledo. I think he's really proven that he can handle the pressure of being in the Eastern League, and so really the next best step for him would be a promotion and then let him get some looks at some more advanced hitters.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I'm really excited to see some of these arms pitch on the higher level. I'm really excited for what the Detroit Tigers have going on for them. I think I can speak for myself, P, and Peyton, that we're all massive prospect buffs. I mean, I talked to Lance literally for hours, and we send massive paragraphs discussing some of these prospects. But just to shift away from the Detroit Tigers for a little bit, on as far as other teams go, Vladdy Guerrero is about to get called up on Friday. Fernando Tatis has been called. He made the opening day roster. But my question for you is in terms of manipulating service times and how MLB teams have been doing it. The Blue Jays, for instance, they got an extra year of control of Vladdy Guerrero. It's been already about a week and a half ago. And Vladdy's already been playing. I think he's already been in AAA hitting bombs. What are your thoughts and feelings about just how teams manipulate service time? And even when just Vladdy kind of the Jays have that extra year already, yet they still keep him down there, even though he's just so very noticeably ready. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's probably the more ugly side of the baseball business. And obviously the fans don't enjoy it when you've got a big name like Vladdy, who is so close to making his debut. It's really more of the side of it that I don't think fans will ever fully be able to understand. And that's figuring out the best moves for your team as an owner, you know, as a front office. And it's really on a team by team basis. You have to make the calls, you know, like the Padres did by promoting Fernando Tatis, getting him on the roster, the Mets giving Peter Alonso an opportunity. And several other teams giving their guys a shot too. And obviously they're all seeing success. And so I think as an ownership, you have to sort of make that call on your own. You've got to go with your gut on that and say, ultimately, is this going to benefit our organization from a business standpoint, or should we hold off a little bit? So really it's team by team, and they're going to have to make the call with what they believe would be the best move for their system.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And something that I found really funny was a couple of days ago, it was reported on Twitter that the Blue Jays are going to be calling up Vladdy Guerrero on Tuesday night. And last night, I think we usually get about 10,000 people to get to the Rogers Center for games right about this time of year. And I think that number went up to 20,000 on Tuesday night, which is insane. And Vladdy wasn't even there. The fact that I think it's confirmed that he's going to be up on Friday. It's going to be insane in Toronto. Like, we treat this guy like a god right now. But in terms of your coverage of other teams like the Padres, who are some of the big names that the players that you just really enjoyed watching on the minor league level on teams that outside of the Detroit Tigers?
Oh gosh, there are so many. And I feel very, very appreciative of being able to go see outside organizations. Getting to sort of expand my coverage a little bit has been really, really fun in addition to doing the Tiger system. Vladdy, I think I'm as much of a fan of Vladdy as everybody. I got to talk to him in Arizona when he was out there for the Fall League, and he is as charismatic and well-natured and just a really, really wonderful kid off the field as much as he is, you know, fun to watch on the field. Another one that I have really enjoyed getting to know too, just from a character perspective, is Bo Bichette, who obviously unfortunate news with him and having a broken hand diagnosed this week. So it's a big blow for the Blue Jays system because he was really making some progress. And then with the Padres, I mean, the Padres system is like Prospect Christmas. You go watch any of their affiliates and they're just absolutely stocked with young players. But again, going back to the minor league side of things, their guys are ranging from 17, 18, 19 years old. They're all a gamble. You know, you kind of have to look and see what you think you see in the future of these guys and then getting them to hopefully develop into what they think they see. And I have so much respect for the Padres international scouting director, Chris Kemp, and the group that he's pulled together on the international circuit has really, really been impressive. So having guys in place to understand the international market and have that eye for players, I think is incredible. And so a lot of kudos to the Padres for the success that they've had. And then, yeah, the Blue Jays had a chance to cover some of their guys coming up and have done some Dodgers work, some White Sox, some Cubs. So it's been fun. It keeps me on my toes and kind of helps me stay educated about who else is around the system. And it's been fun to pull out some cool stories from those experiences.
And being in Toronto, seeing Bo Bichette go down with a broken hand and the Leafs losing game 7 for like the 50th time in a row, it broke my heart. Everything just went horribly wrong yesterday.
Rich, do the Leafs ever win a playoff series, like ever?
The thing is that we were up 3 separate times in this series, so it kind of gave me hope. And then yesterday happened, and I'm just like, oh, God, this fantasy draft better go really well. And I just got a bunch of, like, airbenders and guys who chuck 95, 96, and I kind of felt okay with it. But anyways, just to finally transition over and go into a different direction, Emily, a lot of the guests that we've had on this podcast, guys who work in biomechanics, a lot of just pure people that are purely on the scouting side, it's really interesting that you kind of blend journalism with scouting and you have a really different perspective and you view baseball in a very different lens. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how a journalistic view is so much more different than, say, we had Kyle Bodie on, and he's more on the player development side, biomechanics. My thesis research is all about that sort of area, and he comes from a coaching background. So if you could possibly speak a little bit about how it's like for a journalist in the game.
Yeah, it's definitely never a dull moment. I will say that. It's been a fun journey of being able to mix more of the evaluation side with the storytelling. And I think that I've really come to enjoy the player evaluation so much just because it's really helping me understand the players better, in addition to educating the fans on what type of players are coming up, what tools do you look for, what red flags do you look for, just all the different little nuances of watching how player development works. And it's been a good challenge for me because I'm realizing in my position, and scouts will tell you this too, you have to form an opinion and you have to be able to stand on that opinion. And so knowing why you formed that opinion is huge because you can't fall back on it and say, well, another scout told me it was a good idea, so it must be true. That's not how it works. If you want to have respect in the industry, you have to be able to stand on your own work and you have to be able to have the material to back that opinion up. And so that's really been a good challenge and a big challenge for me, just because putting your stuff out there is always, you know, a little intimidating, a little daunting. But every time I've put stuff out, you feel a little bit more confident. You start to get a little bit more of a flow of things. And it's been a fun thing to be a part of. It's been very, very stretching, but in a really good way. So I'm definitely grateful that I have the opportunity to do both things.
Emily, that's actually really cool. And like, obviously in the very daunting world of Twitter and just social media, just the environment that it is now, and obviously just putting your stuff out there and having to have the confidence to stand behind it. That's just great. Not to make you backtrack a little bit, but I was just kind of curious a little bit more about like what got you interested in baseball communication? What got you interested in just writing baseball, writing about prospects? I know you kind of said that wasn't the original plan, but just in general, just kind of give me a little bit of background of like what got you into this in the first place.
Yeah, I grew up around the game. My dad was a huge baseball fan. He grew up in Arkansas, so he was actually a Cardinals fan, and a Cardinals fan who married a Cubs fan. It's very curious, locking of two worlds, but it really kind of brought a fun little angle to growing up, and we would watch a lot of games on TV. I remember going to Tiger Stadium before that closed down as a kid, and you know, having those memories before ultimately coming to Comerica, and just being around the game, I think, really sort of made it nostalgic to me. It always felt like home. It always felt comfortable, but I never viewed it as something that I could do as a career. It was always just kind of like, oh, it's just baseball. But then as I started to get a little older, I was working in management, and I thought, you know, I wonder, just because I wasn't quite having the fulfillment in my current job, and I thought, you know, I wonder if I could ever pursue that. I'd always loved to write. I'd always, you know, had that side of me that I sort of kept to myself. And it really just came down to me ultimately taking a chance and having people sort of look at what I was doing and saying, let's give her a shot. Let's see what she can do. And I can't say enough about the mentors I've had, about the people who have spoken into my life, the people who have told me to keep going when I didn't want to keep going. You mentioned Twitter. Twitter can be a incredibly supportive and incredibly brutal environment to be involved in. And so having to learn the balance of that and having to learn not to take myself too seriously and just enjoying the opportunities that come along, I think was really the biggest lesson for me. And then obviously one of the more fulfilling parts is hearing if I've ever inspired a young girl coming up. Somebody who's wanted to pursue that and has been told the same things I was, where this isn't normal for girls. Girls don't want to be involved in baseball. The matter of fact is they do. And a lot of them have just been too intimidated to speak up about it. And so from that aspect, it's very humbling if I ever hear that I have inspired a girl, because I want girls especially and guys to know that it doesn't matter what society is telling you. If you're passionate about something, if you have a dream that you want to pursue, don't let society dictate that. You get to call the shots and you get to put yourself in that position of chasing what you love and what you're passionate about. So if I'm able to inspire people to do that through my work, I consider that a job well done. So it's been really, really fun so far.
Mm-hmm. And you actually hit on some very powerful points there. Like I said, I have a more just a biomechanics background, a little bit more of a scouting background. But when I can, I try to write about the game as well. I've actually written quite a few blogs just regarding baseball over the years, and just reading just articles on The Athletic, reading some of your articles. A lot of the times, it's just you kind of have to read a couple of papers or a couple of articles, and just kind of inspires you to write something on your own and do something yourself. So. I've read a lot of your minor league blogs and a lot of your prospect blogs, and just reading articles like that just helps me as a writer myself, just obviously not on the same level as yourself, but just doing just random blogs on the side. So I really thank you for that. And you mentioned the point of women in baseball. And for example, I have a couple of friends who are in scouting and they're females, and they've gone through a really rough time just getting their foot into the door. I have one friend who's down in Houston, and she went to scout a game and she got essentially embarrassed by a couple of other male scouts who were there who just didn't make her feel wanted. And I assume the journey to this point for you has been very difficult, being a female in a very male dominated field. How are you able to really persevere throughout the journey, just consistently be confident and just be strong? Because I'm sure it was really difficult at certain points.
Yeah, at certain points it was, yeah, very, very challenging. And I would love to say, you know, you stay consistently confident, but it is a process of waking up in the morning and reminding yourself why you're doing what you're doing. What was the purpose of you starting this to begin with? And I think that sort of gives a fresh breath into the work that you do, just saying, look, this is what you love. This is what you wake up for every day. And so reminding yourself of that is really huge. And on the scouting side, I have had a mixed response from scouts, but I will say I've had more positive than negative. A lot of that has to do with, you know, some of the old school mentalities are not always as open to change, but there have been a lot of the veteran scouts who have taken me under their wing, and they've been incredibly supportive and very helpful with directing and answering questions and, you know, keeping me on a good place mentally. And so the support system that I had around me, and I mean, I could sit here for an hour and list people off and still not include everybody, but so many people who just said, you're supposed to do this. This is where you belong. You have to keep going. You have to keep pushing through. And I think that ultimately that's what kept me going and it's got me where I am right now.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I think you're a trailblazer, and I think you're doing just as a fan of your work. It's really exciting every time we see some of your articles come up. As we wrap this one up, since we've talked a lot about prospects, and I kind of wanted to end on this note, Vladdy's getting called up, Fernando Tatis is doing big things in San Diego, so is Chris Paddock, Peter Alonso is hitting every single ball he sees really, really far. Let's get your prediction for who wins Rookie of the Year in the NL and the AL to close things off.
Oh my goodness, that is that's a hefty question. I would not be surprised if Fernando Tatis gets that award as one. He is such an effortless athlete. I think seeing him at spring training this year, that was really one of the big things that struck me, is that not only is he huge, he's huge. For anybody who hasn't seen him up close, he's a very, very large human. He has such a pure athleticism that just makes it look effortless when he's out on the field. And any scout will tell you it clicks. It clicks with him. And so he's one that I would pick for sure on that end. And on the other, I'm not quite sure. Honestly, I would have to probably give that some more thought, just depending on who gets what amount of playing time and how that plays out. But there's definitely, no matter who wins, there's definitely going to be a lot of big names to watch coming up, and it's going to be a fun year, especially for the young players.
Yeah, and I feel like when in doubt with the AL, just go with Flatty. That seems like the general consensus.
It's a pretty safe bet.
There we go. You can't really go wrong. If you mess up, well, so did everybody else. But I completely agree with Fernando Tatis. I think, first of all, 80 grade hair of everyone in that the San Diego Padres called up. I think Chris Paddock has incredible hair, which isn't talked about enough. And like you said about the effort, just how he plays the game effortlessly, I think that's something that I've really noticed with someone like Matt Manning as well. I just want to make that point. Just watching him throw just looks so effortless for him. So lots of exciting things coming up from the minor leagues. The game is getting a lot younger. Emily, thank you for coming onto this podcast. We really appreciate it. Lot of great discussion. Where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, if you want to look me up on Twitter, again, I ran rave all throughout the season, so it's always a good time. But my Twitter is Emily C. Walden, and that's letter C. And I've got a few things in the works about to come up at The Athletic, and then I'll also be making some monthly appearances for the group at Baseball HQ. They have some really good fantasy content that they put out, and so I'm going to be contributing some player evaluation material for them once a month. And the year keeps rolling on, so definitely keep a lookout, and we've got some fun stuff ahead for sure.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to more of your work. Anyways, guys, that's it for this episode. This has been a really great time. Until whenever we record another episode, we honestly never know when we record anymore. But this has been a blast. This has been Pitching to Contact. Until next time.